Hi, I'm Elodie Reed, digital producer for Vermont Public Radio. This podcast has been edited for brevity and clarity. Thanks for listening and enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. A number of states are considering using a vote-by-mail system for the November election because of safety concerns posed by the coronavirus. In Vermont, using a recently passed law, Secretary of State Jim Condos has proposed such a system. But that law also requires Governor Phil Scott to approve of it, and that's not happening at this time because the governor says he wants to wait until after the August 11th primary election to make a final decision. So how will this dispute get settled? What's at stake for voters and for town clerks who will be tabulating these ballots? With us today to discuss this issue is Secretary of State Jim Condos. Jim, welcome back to Vermont Edition.
Thank you, Bob. It's a pleasure to be here.
I want to mention to our listeners that we did invite Governor Scott to be on the program today so he could talk about his concerns with that vote-by-mail plan, but his office said he couldn't be available, so a little later in the program we'll hear some of his latest comments on this issue. Jim, you're obviously supporting a vote-by-mail system for the November election. Why do you think this step is necessary?
Well, first, let me just say that, and to clearly state, this is just for this election year. If the legislature wants to take it up for permanent action, that would have to be a later debate. This is just for this year, and obviously it's because of the pandemic. Let me first reiterate two unwavering goals that have been driving my decision-making process and my team's decision-making process. One, we want to preserve every Vermont voter's right to vote. And two, we want to protect the health and safety of not only our voters, but also our town clerks and election workers. And as Vermont's chief election officer, I really do believe that it's the only way to accomplish these two critical goals is by mailing a ballot to every registered voter for the November general election. And I also want to clearly state, it's not mandatory that you use that ballot. It is just providing that option if the pandemic should resurge as is being predicted.
So under your plan, a ballot would be mailed out to everybody on the checklist, and then it would be up to the individual to decide if they wanted to return that ballot by mail or come in and vote on Election Day itself?
Correct. So let's just back up a little bit first, and let's talk about the August primary. So the August primary will be conducted as current law allows. There will be no changes to the August primary with one exception. And it's not really a change. It's just that we will be sending out a ballot request form to every active registered voter. The thinking there is that we have the August primary is usually 20 to 25% of the voter checklist and is significantly lower numbers to begin with, as it's just a party nominating process. It's not a true election from the standpoint of electing someone to an office. It's voting for someone to be on the ballot to be elected. So that's the August primary. Now, the August 11th primary election day is obviously set. The early vote period would start 45 days ahead of time, and that is June 26th. So we really have very little time between now and then. In fact, today is the first day of the submission process period for candidates to file their paperwork to run in the primary. So that's the primary. For the general election is on November 3rd. The early vote period starts on September, I think it's 18th or 19th. I believe it's the 18th. So that's when it starts. We have very little time between the two to get things in order. What the governor has asked us to do is to do everything leading up to the actual mailing of ballots to people, and then we'll make that decision after the primary. Why we believe that that's not possible is that it's not the governor's tried to simplify this from by saying that it's really all about the printing of the ballots. The printing of the ballots is really a minor issue. That is a very simplistic way of saying it. It's the infrastructure that we have to put in place, and the vendors that we will be using for both printing and mailing have told us that they need to know by the end of this month so that they can procure the equipment and also the stock, paper stock that they'll need. We're going to have to print well over a million envelopes, and we're going to have to probably print between now, well, for the general election, we're going to print close to 500,000 ballots. So it's really, and I want to be clear, I'm not fighting everyone. Unfortunately, this is being labeled as a fight with the governor. I'm not fighting with the governor. We have to come to an agreement. We are trying to work towards that agreement. We think we have addressed his concerns and proposed a compromise, and we will wait and hear back, we hope today, on whether he accepts that or not. He has said clearly, I think he said it in his press conferences, he's also said it to me personally, that he's not philosophically opposed to a vote by mail option, that this is not a political or partisan issue for him, and that he understands that nothing will change in our ability to predict the status of the virus in August versus today. He and Dr. Levine have both said that. He did not want to be in this position in the first place between my office and our elections process, and he said that he told me, and he told you folks, that he trusts and defers to our office as the experts in the conduct of elections. His primary concern appears to be that he wants to hold off making the final decision until after the primary. My concern is that may be too late. He says, well, you can go ahead and do all the infrastructure and procurements and contracts that you're going to need to do. Well, there's a cost attached to those, and we've estimated that just the immediate cost going into August will be around $1 million. The final cost will be over $3 million. We do have federal monies that will pay for this through the Help America Vote Act. But the problem is we also get audited on how we spent that money. So if we use that money to set up all the infrastructure, pay for everything, contracts and all that, and then decided not to do it, there could be a clawback by the federal government mm-hmm. asking for that money to be repaid. And I can tell you that I don't have that money in my budget that I can repay that. And it would have to come out of the state coffers.
You mentioned the governor's position a number of times. Let's just play a short clip of how the governor addressed this issue at his press briefing this past Monday.
Yeah, well, again, what I've said is let's move forward, just like we did with every other emergency situation. Let's put the plan in place. Let's get the ballots. Let's get the machines. Let's get everything that we need in place like we're going to do it. But I'm just saying we can't print the ballots until after the primary anyhow. I'm a little concerned about the August primary myself. I mean, there's still 100 or 200,000 people who are going to vote in that election. So I'm concerned about that one first. But having said that, we do have absentee ballots that could be available for that. And the Secretary of State doesn't seem to be as concerned about that one as the general. So he's the expert. I'll take his advisement on that. We'll get through the primary, and then you'll determine who is in line on the general, and then you'll have to print the ballots at that point. So I'm just saying at that point we can determine whether to continue down this path as we started with this plan in place or not. We will know a lot more. Just think back. I mean, it was just less than two months ago, that we started down this path. It was March 13th that the state of emergency came into place. We'll know a lot more in August about where we're going with this, whether it's more testing in place and so forth. And And again, I'm not saying no. This isn't philosophical. This isn't political. I'm just saying we don't need to make this the final decision until August. So it seems pretty easy to me. Move down this path, put the plan in place like you're going to do it, but in August make the final decision as to whether it's going to happen in November, because there still is a primary to go through in between that time.
Secretary Kondos, the governor also said if lawmakers want to go ahead and address this issue in legislation, and they're meeting right now by remote possibilities and technologies, but the governor said if lawmakers want to say, hey, we are going to do vote by mail in November, he would not veto that. He would go along with that. Would you like lawmakers to clarify this and to settle this issue?
It was not that long ago that the legislature passed Act 92, and we are very supportive of what they passed. And part of that bill addresses the issue of the governor and I having to come to an agreement. In other words, it's up to me as the chief elections officer to make the proposal, and the governor needs to either agree or not agree. We understand that, and we believe that we can come to an agreement with the governor. The conversations between the governor's office and our office has been really about trying to address any concerns that he has. I've already explained to you that, and to the governor, that why we can't wait to make the decision. Part of this is really comes down to, Bob, it's the logistics of actually getting this thing not only in place. We have to talk with our IT vendor to make sure our system can marry up to the vendors. And by the way, the two companies that we're dealing with are here in Vermont for the mailing house and printing house. And these are Vermont companies, and I do not want to be put in a position where I tell them, I sign a contract that we're going to do this in August or September, and then have us decide after that that we're going to just breach that contract and say, no, we're not going to do it.
So I guess my question is, though, in the event that you're not able to reach an agreement with the governor's office, if that's not possible, the governor has suggested, well, one way out is to have lawmakers address this, have them pass a bill saying we're doing vote by mail for just this November election. If you're unable to reach an agreement, would you like to see lawmakers address the issue that way?
Well, you know, again, Bob, I believe we can come to an agreement and we will work our try to work that way. It's the fastest way for us to get to this point that we need. If the legislature has to deal with this, it could take several weeks, we don't really have a lot of time. So I would prefer that we stay away from that if we can, and just work to come to an agreement. And we are trying to process any concerns. The latest concern is really the one I acknowledged to you, that he just wants to wait until August. We've tried to explain to him as to why that's not possible. And it also puts our town clerks at a real disadvantage. Our town clerks are very competent. They're very hardworking. They do yeoman's work on election day and leading up to it. And they have other duties that they have to do too. And if all of a sudden they had a strong surge of ballot requests that they have to process and mail out, that's going to impact their work. And it's going to impact many of these town clerks, you know, are only open one day a week or 2 days a week, and many of them have no staff. That's just them. It really provides a problem. The bigger towns, the bigger cities would be able to probably handle it, but then the numbers of people that they would be sending ballots out to is also much higher. And I think you only have to look at what happened in Wisconsin to see that in a previous election, they had less than 100,000 vote by mail or absentee votes that were completed. And in the election about a month and a half ago, they had over a million. So it's a tenfold increase of vote by mail that was processed, and they still had problems on the polling locations at the polls. What we are proposing, and I want to be clear about this, Bob, what we are proposing is just to provide this option. The person receiving a ballot by mail will still, they can fill it out at home, put it into the certificate envelope, mail it back to their town clerk. They can walk into their town clerk's office during that early vote period and deposit that ballot. They can walk into the poll location on election day and drop off the ballot. Or if they've misplaced or lost their ballot, they can walk into the polling location. The polls will check to see, the workers will check to see if they have submitted a ballot. And if not, they will provide them with a new ballot. It's just an option.
Got a lot of people who would like to weigh in on this issue today. So let's start off with Robert in Burlington. Hey, Robert.
Hi.
Welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So I'm a poll worker for Ward 7 in Burlington, and I used to be an election official. And I have to tell you that counting the absentee or the early vote ballots, that was possibly the biggest single job that we had to do. And I'm not sure exactly, but I believe it was less than 20%. I think it was even less than 10%. Of the voters were voting early, and yet it was still such an enormous job to deal with, you know, each envelope, to deal with the signature and stuff like that, and to process the ballot. How if we do this vote by mail thing as the main method, how are we going to be counting these votes? How is that going to happen? Is it going to happen with the towns and the wards in the towns, or is there going to be some other system, you know, involving some machinery that's going to take the burden?
So that's a great question, Bob. But let me just say that one of the options that we're going to do is offer the clerks, the town clerks, the opportunity. They currently can process now absentee ballots on the day before the election. And we're looking at extending that deadline out further. If a town like in Burlington, which uses tabulators, you still would not know who's winning or who's not winning. It would only give you a count up to that point, and there's a real security process that has to follow it. We're looking at changing that to allow for the town clerks and their staffs to process those ballots sooner than later.
Robert, thanks very much for your phone call. Secretary Kondos, we've got a lot of people who are looking at security issues here. Benjamin wrote us, if we allow voting by mail, ballots will get lost. It's easy to manipulate a ballot. This idea is rife with problems. But then we heard from Michael. Oregon does voting by mail and has for 20 years. They don't seem to have any problems, and it's more secure than electronic voting. And John writes us, sadly, voting by mail would be far less secure than the system we have now. Very briefly, what about fraud concerns?
Well, first of all, let me state right up front that widespread voter fraud is really been found to be almost non-existent. That's not to say that you have an occasional one here or there. That we've had the case of that's been thrown at us about North Carolina, where a Republican operative was ballot harvesting and only sending in the ballots that they wanted or actually manipulating. The process worked. A new election was called, and the people involved were adjudicated. What I will say is that really the Brennan Center for Justice has done a study, and I think it was as recent as 2014 or 15, and that study showed that it really doesn't pan out. If you look at, there are now five states that permanently do voter vote by mail. Those states are Oregon, Washington, Colorado, Utah, and Hawaii. This is not a partisan issue. It shouldn't be a partisan issue. Almost every state that has absentee balloting is increasing their absentee balloting and promoting absentee balloting for this coming election, including red states and blue states. It's really about trying to protect the voters, the poll workers. Many of our poll workers are elderly and are in the prime vulnerability cohort. It's about trying to reduce the high traffic in-person voting and clerks who are already telling us that they're going to be short-staffed come fall. Many of the clerks have contacted us to say that they're having difficulty lining up their poll workers because people just don't want to be out there. And the concern I have for the governor, and I've relayed this to him, is how is it any different today than it will be in August to make the decision? Because in August, we still won't know what the situation will be with the pandemic in September, October, or even early November. And for us to go, if we were to wait until August and say, geez, everything looks great, we're not going to go forward with this in August, and then September hits or October hits and the pandemic resurges, as is predicted by national experts, as is being predicted by the governor and his expert, Dr. Levine. They expect that there will be a resurgence. And I think just today we heard Dr. Bright from the CDC testifying before Congress that this could be a very bad winter coming up. So, and I'm not trying to lay the groundwork for a bad situation. I'm trying to protect people and their health and safety as we go forward while still allowing them to cast a ballot.
Today, we've got Secretary Kondos with us on the program, and joining us at this time is Montpelier City Clerk John Odom. John, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Bob. I trust you and Jim are well.
Yes, and we trust that you are as well. So, John, as a city clerk, do you have any safety and health concerns about a large number of voters coming to City Hall in November because of the pandemic?
Oh, certainly. As a citizen of the state, I have concerns about that. I mean, it's we don't know where we're going to be in either August or November, so it's impossible to speak in absolutes in terms of what can and should be done when we get there.
And do you feel that this is a decision that needs to be made now and not waiting until a couple of days after the August primary?
Well, the uncertainty is really problematic. And, you know, this is such an interesting question. I think from the clerk's perspective, in terms of how it would look and how it would work, we certainly, as much lead time as possible to make our plans. You know, some of these things are going to involve some significant changes to workflow, and we need to be able to plan for that as far in advance as possible. But it's also, I think, you know, a lot of us anyway will recognize that this has been an inexorable change around the country. As we've even here, we've expanded early voting so much, and we're going to continue to, that folks are starting to look at election day as not an election day, but an election season. So this is the future we're talking about. It's just that circumstances are having us get there a lot faster, step on the gas pedal, and suddenly we're accelerating there. So we do lose that sort of organic ability over the next few years to make that judgment about what kind of work it's going to need, to how it affects our workflow. We're going to have to figure it out now. So, yeah, the earlier the better.
So, John, what does this mean for you? Let's say we have a vote-by-mail system in place for the upcoming November election. How does that affect your office in terms of additional work? Do you need extra money from the state in terms of tabulating these things? Does it take on a whole new additional workload for your office?
Well, it certainly changes it. And that's, I mean, that's the biggest question there. We are going to need, you know, some money from the state to at least get started, because we're going to have to make some physical changes to things like Dropbox capacity and stuff, so that folks, you know, because simply mail, that's not going to work for people. A lot of folks are going to want to drop it off. Obviously, we're going to have a smaller election day, which would just be essentially a drop-off situation, so don't need the staffing there nearly as much. It's manageable possibly simply by city staff without bringing in any volunteers or members of the Board of Civil Authority. But then you've got a situation where you'll need to be processing large amounts of ballots for weeks ahead of the election. So that, you know, capacity to feed stuff into the machines on an ongoing basis weeks before is absolutely going to be critical to this. But yeah, I mean, I think more or less the staffing, you know, needs are going to more or less equalize. It's just going to be a matter, really, of shifting our perspective and managing that workflow differently. But and I realize in Montpelier, you know, we're in a pretty good place. We've got you know, we've got the one polling place, but I've got a very engaged Board of Civil Authority and a deep pool of volunteers, so we can make changes pretty deftly. I have complete confidence in that here, but I know it is going to be more challenging for some other folks.
You mentioned with the large number of ballots that you would get by mail that you might need some weeks to tabulate these ahead of time. Secretary Kondos was saying, you know, I got the impression, but we can ask him as a follow-up, maybe allowing town clerks to tabulate these ballots in the week before. But I thought I heard you say weeks.
Oh, I would love weeks. I mean, if a week is what we get, a week is what we'll work with. But again, the more time, the better. And so much of this, there's the knowns and the known unknowns and the unknown knowns. It's just going to be a big question. So as much flexibility as we can get, the better. I would love weeks. I would love to be able to start putting those things through the system as we start getting them back and do, you know, daily counts, daily, you know, daily reconciliation of the counts versus what came in. Ideally, that would be terrific. If that doesn't happen, we'll take what we can get.
Secretary Kondos, how much time do you think would be appropriate for places like Montpelier, larger cities, to start tabulating these ballots as they come in by mail?
We are actually looking at the possibility of up to 30 days ahead of the election to allow them to process. Because, again, as I stated, John, you can vouch for this or verify this. They will not see any results. All they will see is a count. So they'll start at the beginning of the day when they go to put the first ballot in, and it says you processed 111 ballots. You process a series of ballots, and at the end of the day, it might say you've now processed 220 ballots. And then the next morning, that number has got to match up. So the 220 that it was the night before has to match up with the 220 that morning, and then they start again. They will not see any results other than the fact of the number of ballots that are going through the machine. So the machine will keep that tally separate. And you know, I think John can probably speak to this better than I can, because he's operated them pretty regularly.
Let's go to our listeners right now and talk to Sonia, who is calling from Jericho. Hi, Sonia. Welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thanks.
I, as a citizen, feel that it's very important that we move to this vote-by-mail option, and I think the secretary has offered some steps to assist the town clerks with the extra number of ballots that they would be getting that way. So I would strongly support this program.
And Sonia, in the past, have you used the early voting system in Vermont by any chance?
Yes, I have. I've used early voting. I've also voted by absentee if I was going to not be able to get to the polls on that day, and both processes I found quite easy to use. But I do think one of the things that will be very important if we move to this program is to educate people how to do it, because I understand oftentimes the mail-in ballots get rejected because the voter hasn't done something correct in providing the ballot. And so I think that educating the voters will be extremely important.
Sonia, that's a really great point. John Odom, there's sort of a checklist you have to go through when people return these official envelopes, right? They've got to sign it. There are other steps they have to take. Is there a concern here that there some people may end up being disenfranchised because they haven't followed the system?
That would be one of my two real sort of – yeah, that's one of my two real concerns. I mean, it is just – heartbreaking to have to reject a ballot because, you know, something wasn't signed right or the ballots weren't properly sealed. That's just awful. And it does not happen very often, but it would be important to keep an eye on that because if that appreciably increases, yeah, we're going to have to do a lot more educating for sure. We may have to do more than that. The other thing that's going to concern me is the sometimes inconsistencies of the post office, which is why we want to make sure we have a good drop-off facility and, you know, maybe even take advantage of some of the flexibility we have, you know, under the statutes to, you know, have remote, you know, head out to places where some of these voters are. You know, like maybe some of the retirement communities and stuff and help facilitate it there. So we do little things like that, you know, eating around the edges. Then we start taking away some of those concerns about folks not knowing how to do it and not doing it right.
Secretary Condos, I was going to say we got this, just to follow up, we got this email that says, I've gone door-to-door and phone bank for candidates using the voter checklist. About 25% of those lists have been incorrect. Many people have either been deceased or moved. What happens when all those ballots go out? Could people illegally fill them out? Secretary Condos, what about that concern?
Well, first of all, the voter checklist is far more accurate today than it ever has been. We have the automatic voter registration system that we now have with DMV helps provide more accurate addresses. And much of the concern it's still a concern, but much of the concern that has been raised about this is actually prior to the new election management system that we put in place. And, you know, I do want to plug my staff here. In 2012, we were ranked 38th in the nation. That was the very first election that I oversaw. We were ranked 38th in the nation, and this is by the MIT Election Performance Indicators. They rank all the 50 states after every general election. In 2014, we moved from 38th to 16th, and in 2016, we had moved to number one in the nation. So we have by far one of the top systems in place, management systems, and I know John uses it frequently, and we're always looking on how we can make improvements at it. Now, we do have I've been asked before, are there dead people on the voter checklist? And the answer to that is yes, there are dead people on the checklist, as there are in all 50 states. There are always going to be dead people on the checklist because it takes time for those to clear up. And, you know, one of the problems we have, Bob, frankly, is that dead people don't call us up to tell us to take their name off the list. We do know that the automatic voter registration helps us with updated addresses because people do have a tendency to go change their address on their driver's license, but not necessarily go to their town clerk and change their address there. So this makes it more important. Are we going to have are there errors on the checklist? I would say yes, but they're manageable. And one of the things we're looking at is how we process those ballots. In other words, the ballots will be mailed to a specific address, and we haven't confirmed it yet, but we're probably going to have it as a non-forwarding, so it returns back to us. And if there's a new address that's been listed with the post office, then we will get that new address. there are ways to overcome this. And I must say, and John can verify this, but we also have what's called the certificate envelope, which is you put your ballot in a specific envelope. You have to print your name and sign it. It's a penalty of perjury point, and then you put that inside an outer envelope before you mail it back. And this is all part of the process. And again, there have been studies done that voter fraud is virtually non-existent with vote by mail. I'm not going to say it doesn't happen. It could, just like it could walking in and voting. So, you know, it's just... It just doesn't occur. People do not do that.
Other states across the country have moved to vote by mail. And to help us look at the national landscape is Nathaniel Rakich, who is an elections reporter for the national political website 538. Nathaniel, thanks for taking the time to be on the program.
Hi, Bob. It's my pleasure.
Nathaniel, we've got five states that primarily use vote by mail, Colorado, Hawaii, Oregon, Utah, and Washington. Based on your reporting, how is it working in these states?
Yeah, well, those states, you know, they've been, many of them at least, have been voting by mail for quite a long time. I believe Oregon's been doing it for more than 20 years. So, you know, they have got it down to a science. You know, I think the question that's facing Vermont and all these other states that are considering switching to vote by mail this year is whether they can kind of spin up a vote by mail infrastructure in time for the November election, let alone the primary. You know, that has kind of consistently been in my reporting the stumbling block that people are facing just logistically. And if you talk to officials in those states, like Oregon, for example, they will tell you that it took them years to work out all of the kinks in the vote by mail system.
And looking at some of the reporting that you've done, we've got these five states that do vote by mail. We've got 26 that have some variation of early voting, and then 19 states that have very strict rules about absentee voting, like Vermont used to have in the old days when you kind of needed an excuse, perhaps to if you were not going to be in the area to vote. But Vermont now has the most lenient early voting law in the country. Secretary Kondos was telling us today you can vote 45 days before the election. It's you don't have to have a reason. It's just if it's convenient for you, then you can do that. So for a state like Vermont, is the learning curve to go from our early voting system to a total vote by mail system, is that going to be a fairly easy transition?
Yeah, well, you know, I'd certainly be curious to hear what the Secretary of State has to say, but kind of overall, the you know, in my reporting, what I've heard consistently is that states, you know, there are states that don't automatically vote by mail, but that still kind of have, I guess you'd call it a culture of voting by mail. So those include states like Arizona, where a majority of voters actually do choose to vote by mail, even though it's not the default election method in those states. So generally speaking, people have told me that those states are better set up to switch to a vote by mail system, both because voters are used to that system and the election infrastructure is in place to handle a large volume of mail votes. Now, Vermont, you know, there isn't a huge volume of mail votes, proportionally speaking, in Vermont. In our numbers, according to the Election Assistance Commission, only in 2018, only 6% of registered voters in Vermont were mailed a ballot because they requested it. So that would be, you know, they would require a lot of voter education, a lot of kind of staffing up, bulking up that system in Vermont. But the nice thing that Vermont has is that the absolute population isn't very high. So in other states like California, for example, which recently announced that it's going to mail a ballot to every election or every voter in the general election. California is, you know, a lot of people in California vote by mail, but it also has millions of people who don't vote by mail. And Vermont only has about 500,000 registered voters in the entire state. So it wouldn't be as big or as expensive of a lift for Vermont to mail ballots to all of those voters.
And Nathaniel, if you look back at the 2016 presidential election, you would see a much larger group of voters choosing the early voting system than you saw in 2018. I think it would be up around 20 or 25%. So it's starting to be part of the culture in Vermont. Nathaniel, it seems like this has become a partisan issue in some parts of the country where Democrats seem to favor vote by mail and a number of Republicans don't. Based on your reporting and your research, does vote by mail favor either political party?
No. According to most research, vote by mail does increase turnout, but it does so equally among Democrats and Republicans. So, for instance, you know, Republicans will often claim that vote by mail makes it easier to perpetrate voter fraud, which, as the Secretary said, there's not a lot of evidence for that. You also have a case where just this week, in fact, a special election in California was conducted entirely by mail, and the Republican won that race, and that was for a swing district. No, you know, there's no kind of partisan reason to support or oppose vote by mail. But as you say, it has kind of emerged as this partisan issue throughout the country. There are many states where Democrats, such as Minnesota and Arizona, come to mind, where Democrats are pushing to have their states go to, entirely vote-by-mail elections. But Republicans so far have blocked or are stalling those efforts.
Let's talk to Fred, who's calling from Bristol. Hi, Fred. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. Hi, Jim. How are you?
I'm good.
Doing well.
My question is this. I support the vote-by-mail. However, the suggestion that we might want to do this a month ahead of time, to me, sounds fraught with hazards. It would favor incumbents in terms of the election process, because we're shortening up the voting period by a considerable amount of time, and it doesn't allow people to just change their minds for election day, which I know has happened to me once or twice in my history of voting because of something I've learned or something that was said. So I'm concerned about that, and I wonder, is there any way to address it, or is it just tough?
So from my standpoint, I would just say that there's no requirement that you vote 45 days or 30 days or 15 days ahead of time. You can hold on to that as long as you want and make your decision at a later time. I'm trying to remember, what was the other part of your question?
Well, I guess it had to basically, are we favoring incumbents by opening a window with the mail? I wasn't aware that you could necessarily postmark your ballot the day ahead versus doing it 30 days in advance. So my concern
I wouldn't take the option of mailing it the day ahead. The town clerk still needs, at the current time, the town clerk still needs to receive that ballot by 7 o'clock on election day. So you might want to do it a few days earlier than that. But I do want to say that I don't believe that this encourages or supports an incumbent over a challenger. When we talked about processing the ballots, nobody will know who's winning or who's losing. It's really just the number of ballots that have been processed, and that is it. And, I would defer to John, as a town clerk, to speak if he's still on the line.
He is no longer with us, okay. But we can certainly talk to him after the program. Let's go back to our callers and talk to Wesley in Newport. Hi, Wesley. Welcome to the program.
Fantastic. First timer. I was never registered to vote until 2010 when I was released from corrections after quite a healthy stay. And I've voted ever since. My question is for corrections and the inmates that are incarcerated, are they qualified for voting in the first place? And through what they're going through right now, will they be able to vote come November?
Okay, we're almost out of time, but Wesley, let's get an answer from Secretary of State Kondos.
So the simple answer is yes, that Vermont is one of two states, us and Maine, that allows incarcerated or individuals with felonies to continue. They never lose their rights to vote. And you are allowed to register. You are allowed to vote in Vermont if you're incarcerated at the and your location is not where you're incarcerated, it is the last residential place that you lived in Vermont.
Secretary Condos, thanks for that answer. We're almost out of time, but Nathaniel, we've heard a lot about possible voter fraud from President Trump and some Senate Republican leaders in Washington. Based on your reporting and your experience, how big an issue is voter fraud with voting by mail?
It's just not a very big issue, if at all. You know, these five states that currently conduct all of their elections by mail, even absent the coronavirus, you know, they've never had a major instance of election fraud. In general, you know, election fraud is very rare, regardless of the method that you use. So I certainly wouldn't worry about that.
Well, this has been a great discussion of the entire vote-by-mail system. Many thanks to our guest today, Secretary of State Jim Condos, Nathaniel Rakich of the 538 website, and also thanks to Montpelier City Clerk John Odom. Thank you all for that discussion today. We really appreciate it.